Blog Talk Radio.
We'll never see you again.
I dearly hope so, my prince. There is so much more I have to tell you. Everything you know is about to change.
American Daily Review.
Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the Founding Fathers. Not too long ago, two friends of mine were talking to a Cuban refugee, a businessman who had escaped from Castro. And in the midst of his story, one of my friends turned to the other and said, "We don't know how lucky we are." And the Cuban stopped and said, "How lucky you are. I had some place to escape to." And in that sentence, he told us the entire story. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth. And this idea that government is beholden to the people, that it has no other source of power except the sovereign people, is still the newest and the most unique idea in all the long history of man's relation to man. This is the issue of this election. Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves. Road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay, there is a point beyond which they must not advance.
When America needed them most, two men rose to the occasion. Doug Gibbs of Constitution Radio and PoliticalPistachio.com. Jasmius of PoliticalPistachio.com, Constitution Radio, and the Hard Starboard Radio Network. This is American Daily Review. BlogTalkRadio.com.
Thank you.
Asmius. Of American Daily Review at blogtalkradio.com/AmericanDailyReview, a production of the Hard Starboard Radio Network, airing Saturdays 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. It is the kickoff and first 2 hours of the 3-hour Saturday afternoon extravaganza, which is only going to be a little over 2 hours today because I had to pick up my father at the hospital emergency room, and I just got back from there, and he's fine. It's just the same catheter problems that he's had for, you know, ever since last summer. So this is like the third or fourth month in a row that he's had the catheter plug up, and so the urine backs up, and, you know, it's a miserable existence. But it's still probably in the high end of the nuisance category, but I am talking to him about, hey, Dad, there is a procedure you can do where maybe you could pee again. And he says, well, I can't get up to get to the toilet in time. Hey, Dad, I would rather wear Depends 24/7 than have a catheter shoved up my schwanz. So that's just me. But I'm not gonna try to push him into anything. I said, you know, that's up to you, Dad. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to keep having to go to the emergency room every month. But we shall see what transpires from that. Anyway. Truncated American Daily Review today. Constitution Radio will air at its normal time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on KMET1490AM.com. And I got a call from Douglas V. Gibbs, America's Constitution Authority, earlier this morning, that he would be calling into the program maybe 30 to 45 minutes into it. Well, we started about that much into it. Don't see him in the queue. I want to get this, because we got a lot of stories today, and I want to get this monologue in. Fortunately, most of the stories are pretty brief, so I think there's room for this monologue, which I know I'm not going to have any chance to get it in on Constitution Radio, so I want to get it in here. guest call in number 646-595-4520. Chat room is open. And, of course, my email address and the source for all past editions, all past podcasts of Constitution Radio with Douglas V. Gibbs, jasmius@comcast.net. Specify the dates. I'll be happy to send them to you. Now, until Donald Trump changed the subject, punishing women for having abortions, the Trump obsession of the week was Michelle Fields. You know, the former Breitbart political reporter who got manhandled by Donald Trump's campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, bruised her forearm, and then Lewandowski had initially admitted it, and then Trump got hold of him and said, "No, you got to fight back," because Trump's the biggest bully I've ever seen, biggest bully in the history of American politics. And so Lewandowski changed his story and said, "Oh, I never touched her. I never came anywhere near her. She's making it all up. She's delusional." And then it's deteriorated to the point where Trump is threatening to file criminal charges against her, against Michelle Fields, and accusing her of having a pen bomb and just ridiculous foolishness. Because, of course, accountability and owning one's actions and accepting responsibility, well, that's weak. That's not strength. That's weakness. That's beta male stuff. Donald Trump doesn't do beta male stuff. He doesn't accept responsibility. He's always right. He always wins. Now, I'm glad the story is, no, the story isn't gone, but without rehashing the whole thing again with reference to frame-by-frame analysis. Oh, by the way, the photographic evidence proves that Lewandowski ragdolled Michelle Fields. The video evidence supports it. There's eyewitness testimony. Ben Terrace of the Washington Post, who was standing 2 feet away, saw the whole thing. And, of course, the pictures of the bruises on her arm seems kind of, like I say, incontrovertible, open and shut. It's the kind of thing where if Lewandowski had just kept his hands to himself, first of all, or failing that, immediately apologized, said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that, I got carried away," probably nothing would have come from it. But the way that Trump Inc. works, that pissed Michelle Fields off, and so, yeah, she filed misdemeanor battery charges, and the Jupiter, Florida local police department didn't dismiss them because there was evidence. I mean, in other words, this has become as big a thing as it has because of Donald Trump. You know, Trump could have defused this, and Lewandowski could have defused it. He admitted it. Immediately in the first couple of days after it happened. And then Trump got on his ear and said, no, you got to fight back. You know, so he started recanting it and lying about it and smearing Michelle Fields. And, of course, Breitbart, which is Trump Pravda, didn't stick up for her either. And so she quit, and Ben Shapiro quit along with her in solidarity with her. But it's become as big a thing as it has because of Trump. Because Trump is never wrong. Trump never gives any ground. He always fight. Well, sometimes you're wrong, and you need to own it. And Donald Trump's not capable of doing that. Now, without rehashing the whole thing, which I pretty much did, I'm practicing for later on today on KMET, with reference to frame-by-frame analysis best left for the Zapruder film, let me just say, I think all of the important and relevant facts are on Michelle Fields' side. There's audio of her describing what happened immediately after the Corey Lewandowski incident. There are the bruises captured on film. There's video, and there are eyewitness accounts, all of which corroborate the basic story Fields has been telling. To listen to Trump's and Lewandowski's defenders, this is all a big lie, the upshot being that, and you include Doug in that category too, based on his post at politicalpistachio.com yesterday. The upshot being that Fields invented the whole story in a deviously clever conspiracy to trade her job at Breitbart and her regular gig on Eric Bolling's show for something so much better. Indeed, I think her plan went something like this. Step one, ask Donald Trump about affirmative action while he's walking out of a press conference. Step two, walk in just such a way to dupe Corey Lewandowski into putting his hands on her. Step three, pretend that he grabbed too hard, convincing eyewitnesses on scene that something bad happened. Step four, bruise her own arm and take a picture of it. Step five, ask for an apology from the Trump campaign, which is like asking Trump to create a boulder too heavy for him to lift. Step six, wait for her own news organization to throw her under the bus and then quit her job. And step seven, wait for the checks to roll in. Entirely plausible, isn't it? Still, what happened to Fields? It was not Kristallnacht, and Lewandowski should not, in, well, I don't really care, frankly, stand trial. Well, you know, he will or he won't. And if the evidence supports it, then he will. You know, this is, again, another one of those things where Trump could have defused this. It's gotten to this point because of Trump. Because of Trump being Trump. He never owns anything, always fight back, even if he's wrong, which Lewandowski was. And so Trump has Lewandowski doubling down on it. I mean, it would have been a very simple thing to defuse, but Trump had to do what he always does. And so that pissed Michelle Fields off. And so now she filed misdemeanor battery charges. Whether it'll go to trial, I don't know. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But the whole thing would have been over without any of us having heard a word about it if Lewandowski had any common sense or decency and apologized for overreacting and throwing Fields an interview with, you know, he could have thrown her an interview with Trump to make amends. It could have been diffused. It didn't have to get to this point. The only reason it did was because of Donald Trump. Because of who he is and what he is and what he has been his entire adult life. 40 years on the national stage. This is Trump, folks. He can't change. He's never changed. This is who he is. But observing common courtesy and civility is not what the team does. Or not what Donald Trump does. And that's the real issue here. Donald Trump and his campaign take great pride in overturning the basic rules of politics and democratic discourse, small d, Republican discourse, small r. For those who want to see the establishment, however defined, torn down, this bull in a china shop stuff is celebrated. Trump's fans ascribe a brilliance to his actions that is wholly undeserved. Breaking the rules in ways large and small is seen as self-justifying in every case. Or almost every case. This week, there have been some cracks in the facade. Trump's attacks on Heidi Cruz unsettled even Ann Coulter. Yeah, that's some unsettling right there. And his abortion remarks are still sending tremors through the granite foundations of Trump can-do-no-wrong-ism. Joe Scarborough and Breitbart's John Nolte, you know John Nolte, the guy who wished every never-Trumper to burn to death in a fire this week, John Nolte, are talking about what a bad week he's having and gravely warning Trump to get his act together. As Jim Garrity has been writing, the problem with such second thoughts is the assumption that something is amiss with Trump or his campaign. But that's really not the issue. That's really not the point. This is Trump. This is his campaign. The Trump we see before us is the same Trump that's always been before us. It's a bit like Barack Obama said, or when Barack Obama said that the Jeremiah Wright he saw denouncing America wasn't the man he knew. That was nonsense. Obama knew exactly who Jeremiah Wright was, having attended his church for 20 years. It was only when Wright's act moved to a larger national stage that all of a sudden he became inconvenient to Obama. Now, the analogy isn't perfect, of course, but the basic point is the same. The Donald Trump of the last week is the exact same Donald Trump many of us saw a year ago, 5 years ago, 10, 20, 30 years ago. He's always been full of shit. He's always been a total ignoramus when it comes to public policy, lacking the simple sense of patriotic duty to do his homework on the issues. He's always been a nasty and boorish cad. He's always pretended to be a conservative while working on liberal assumptions of what conservatives want to hear. His punish the women comments about abortion were of a piece with his refusal to condemn the Klan on CNN. It's not that he wants to punish women who have abortions. I'd bet he's paid more abortion bills than he will ever sign. It's that he thinks that's what pro-lifers want to hear. It's not that he's a Klansman or the pillowcases of Mar-a-Lago come with eye holes cut out in advance. It's that Trump thinks lots of his fans like the Klan and he wants to pander to them. I've heard firsthand stories from people who work with Trump about how he disparages women. Disparages women's appearance routinely. That's who he is. If you're attacking him because he retweeted a bad picture of Heidi Cruz, that's not you being principled. That's, if you're a shocked Trump supporter, that's you getting cold feet. That's buyer's remorse. Indeed, I'm sure that the same opportunism that has caused so many supposed principled conservatives to hitch their wagons to Trump is now causing some of them to question their choices, not because Trump has changed, but because the climate might be changing around them. By all means, if Trump continues to unravel, and that's a huge if, please abandon Trump. But don't think for a moment that the rest of us will automatically take your word for it when you say this or that statement changed your mind about the man. He hasn't changed. Your calculations have. But can I go back to Michelle Fields for a moment? I think that whole affair was really instructive. Trump is a master of a kind of passive aggression, though it can often just seem like plain old aggression. When caught in a lie, Trump doesn't merely stick to the lie, he enlarges it. Not only did Lewandowski do nothing wrong, he saved Trump from an assault. That pen could have been a bomb. A bomb! Remember when he suggested a protester who charged the stage was with ISIS? Because the truth isn't enough. Even if he's telling the truth, well, that's not enough. It's got to be embellished even more. Because he's Trump. By embracing and enlarging the lie, Trump gives his most ardent fans no escape. They must either fall in line with yet another comfortable story about how their leader is both supremely right and a victim of deceit, or open themselves up to the possibility that this one instance of deception and boorishness isn't unique but utterly representative, which it is. I think many of us have known people like this. Inveterate liars and other kinds of sociopaths test the limit of polite society. They break the implicit bargain that says you can get away with lying only so long as everyone agrees not to notice. Obvious lies are insults because they rest on the assumption that the person being lied to is either too stupid to recognize the lie or too weak to say anything about it. And this since Trump has been insulting his biggest supporters from day one. We've all had dinner parties or family gatherings ruined by that oaf who refuses to bend to simple politeness, which gives me an idea here. Yeah, there we go. They force polite people to either swallow small or large insults for the sake of civility. Oh, I didn't want to... make a huge deal about it because it would just have made things worse as a rationalization we've given voice to on the drive home. Trump is doing this on a massive scale. Like all demagogues, he's using his lies as a loyalty test for his followers. He's exploiting his popularity and abusing the devotion of his fans to force them into going along with his fictions until they are in so deep psychologically they have no choice but to carry on. It's an ancient psychological tactic of authoritarians, mafia dons, and the like. Force your followers into sharing the blame for your misdeeds so that they can't break ranks. For instance, when Trump was caught saying something typically ignorant about abortion, he told Eric Bolling that MSNBC cut out the nuance of what he really said. "Oh, you really ought to hear the whole thing," Trump told guest host Eric Bolling. "This is a long, convoluted question. This was a long discussion, and they just cut it out. And frankly, it was extremely convoluted." Of course, Trump knows that MSNBC ran the clip in its entirety. And Bolling probably does, too. But I'm sure that if I went on Twitter and said Trump lied about his comments being edited, within minutes I'd hear from people saying, "No, MSNBC edited him!" Or, "Of course you rhinos would believe MSNBC!" I'll also be interested to see if Bolling says anything about the fact that Donald Trump blatantly lied to him. But I won't hold my breath.
This line is for ticket holders only, please. Ticket holders
only. All right, move it. Look out. Hey, I'm cutting in front here.
Wait a minute.
Coming through.
You can't do that.
Yeah, who do you think you are?
Yeah. Me?
Yeah.
I'm an obnoxious butthead.
Oh, he's a butthead.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, you know them well. In fact, you encounter them every day.
Hey, you just parked in front of my driveway. What are you, a butthead?
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry, I'll just, back out over my lawn.
We call them buttheads, but they're actually the unfortunate victims of cranial rectosis, a condition which causes people to lose all feeling for others simply because their head is jammed up their... Well, you get the picture.
Excuse me, but this is a no-smoking section.
So, what are you gonna do about it, cupcake?
Don't do anything. He's a terminal butthead. A public service reminder from the Committee to Replace Lab Animals with Buttheads.
Number 17, the Casino Royale of Environmentalism. And this was a piece in Forbes magazine that pointed out what I've been saying for years on this program and on Hard Starboard Radio and on Constitution Radio and been writing about for years at politicalpistachio.com, at hardstarboardblog.com before that. And that is that green energy equals no energy. Green streamers are not for one form of energy, one source of energy over another. They are anti-energy, period. And this piece of Forbes magazine, you know, it's another example. Hey, Jasmius Echo Syndrome in Forbes magazine. It's pretty heady stuff. Would be if I was getting paid for it. Here's a quote from Forbes magazine. "Why does the green movement oppose every practical form of energy?" Well, there's only one answer that can explain this. Greens oppose every practical form of energy not out of love for the non-existent virtues of solar or wind, but because they believe practical energy is inherently immoral. It's in their philosophical DNA. To be green means to minimize our impact on nature. In the green philosophy, the standard of value, the metric by... in which we measure good and bad is human non-impact. Does an action make our environment more or less altered by humans? If we take that idea seriously, then practical energy is not a good thing. In other words, green extremism is a pagan, humanophobic religion in which human beings themselves, us, are the devil, aside from the green extremists themselves, of course. Nature is God, Gaia. And consequently, for evil to be defeated and destroyed, Homo sapiens must be rendered extinct. Except for the green extremists, of course. I mean, Tom Clancy's first Rainbow Six novel was about precisely that. These green extremists, this green extremist group came up with an engineered virus that would wipe out every human being on Earth except for them. Why? Because human beings were Agent Smith. Remember that scene from Agent Smith in the first Matrix picture? You know, human beings are a plague, a disease of this planet, and we are the cure. That's what they try to do. That's what green extremists believe, that human beings are somehow not part of nature. I mean, if you were from an environmentalist perspective, isn't it a given that human beings are part of nature? You know, if we evolved on this planet, then they seem to have a problem with sentience and intelligence, which inevitably means changing the environment to suit the dominant species. Well, green extremists have a problem with that. I mean, the source of energy doesn't matter. The green extremists are against all of it. Fossil fuels are dirty. Nuclear fission is contaminative. But then windmills kill birds by the thousands, and full-blown Dyson sphere to harvest solar energy would no doubt clutter up the inner solar system with man's trash, upsetting nature's cosmic balance, or some other such nonsense. Nuclear fusion will produce energy in abundance once we solve the technological hurdles using nothing but water as fuel and helium as exhaust. What could be cleaner, right? But the green extremists, about 25 years ago, I think, is when they were... thought they were getting close to cold fusion. The green extremists still balked even at that and said no. Here was a quote from the LA Times, late 80s, early 90s. The piece was called Fear of Fusion. Now, there are some quotes from this story, the LA Times, and called Fear of Fusion. What if it works? Or Fear of Fusion, what if it works? Leading environmentalist Jeremy Rifkin said, it's the worst thing that could happen to our planet. Notice he said our planet. It'd be good for us, terrible for the planet. Because, of course, they think that those two things are opposed to each other. Paul Ehrlich, remember Paul Ehrlich, the guy who back in the 70s said that we're going to run out of all vital minerals and we're going to run out of oil by the year 2000. Remember that? Think about that when you're going down to get gas in your car today with $2 gasoline. Paul Ehrlich said, developing fusion for human beings would be like giving a machine gun to an idiot child. Amory, Lovins was already on record as saying, quote, complex technology of any sort is an assault on human dignity? So it's more dignified to live in caves? It would be little short of disastrous for us to discover a source of clean, cheap, abundant energy because of what we might do with it. You know, like heat our homes, run our power plants, generate electricity, be a modern technological civilization. Expand out into space, colonize other planets, colonize the moon, colonize Mars, become a multi-planet species, even one day go to the stars. And that's the worst thing for the planet. It's an assault. complex technology of any sort, an assault on human dignity, because apparently being primitive, filth-ridden, pestilence, and pustule-covered and infected and having, I mean, look here I'm looking at four graphs. One shows CO2 emissions. The others show gross domestic product per person or per capita, you know, prosperity, life expectancy, and population. They all, over the past 2,000 years, they all skyrocket right about the time of the Industrial Revolution. How is greater life expectancy and prosperity a bad thing? Well, to everybody else, it's not. Green extremists, it is. That's why green extremists are the plague on this planet. Okay. I seem to have attracted a crowd again. Well, that's just regularly checking in and seeing if there's any kind of update. So, well, might as well get busy.
I am with Douglas B. Gibbs. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. Free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight? Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your bed, many years from now, would you be willing to train all the day, from this day to that, for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
In every revolution, there's one man with a vision.
Perhaps today is a good day.
Douglas B. Gibbs. How's your audio this week?
Well, let's hope you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Do I sound better than last week?
About the same.
Oh, crap.
Well, I mean, it wasn't terrible last week. It's just not as good as it was with the other soundboard.
Yeah, well, it was terrible during that first 15, 20 minutes.
Well,
it's not that bad, right?
No. I mean, I'm referring to what you got it up to.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, it's fair to middle.
Okay.
On that scale.
Yeah. Oh. Well, that's better than completely crappy. So I'll go with it.
Yeah. Take what you can get. I'm just moving on to story number 16, and a lot of these are really.
Yeah, I noticed that. There's not enough time really this morning.
You and I both had
our own situations going on.
Yeah, well, my dad's fine. It's just his monthly catheter backup. So, had a UTI, and so he's back home. So.
Okay, story number 16, gun violence never dies. Well, you know, it's funny because as you were writing about how Gun-Free Chicago is on track for their murder rate being higher than ever before in astronomical levels, nationally, we're watching gun violence and violent crime go down as gun ownership goes up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there does seem to be a direct
thing.
It does seem to be a direct relationship between the two. I had this theory in Chicago. They're on a pace for 540 homicides.
So what you're saying is it's more dangerous to live in Chicago than it is to go to war in Afghanistan or Iraq.
Yeah, I have this theory that when the city of Chicago confiscates the last legal gun, the last resident of Chicago will be shot and killed. I mean, that's the relationship. I mean, the more they confiscate guns, the more gun violence they have. It's not arguable. In the exact same way that gun violence goes down, the more people are armed. Simple psychology, really.
Okay. No, that's all we got to say about that. Next, wait a second. Now, this morning, one of the reasons why I was at the Corona Tea Party as a speaker, who's a friend of mine and a member of the Constitutional Association, is an NRA certified gun safety instructor.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me this story about how, you know, when she does these classes, you know, 99.9% of people out there don't know jack when it comes to a firearm. They say silly things like weapon instead of firearm. Well, you know, the military have weapons because weapons are there to, you know, kill the enemy.
A baseball bat could be a weapon.
Yeah, well, in your case, as a law-abiding gun owner, it's a firearm because you're not, you know, out to kill. You're out to defend yourself. There's, you know.
Right.
Yeah, unless the militia needs to be called into active duty, that's a different story. Or people like to talk about their clip, you know, they've got all these bullets in the clip, you know, and well, what they're referring to, it's like, you know, the California legislatures want to limit how the size of your clip. Well, that's fine. Just don't limit the size of my magazine. The magazine is what has the bullets in it, you know, as clip is something external.
I love that. They have no idea of the nomenclature, and yet they hold themselves out as being the experts on it, which pretty much describes the left on any issue.
Well, this is true. Anyway, so she's telling me about how she teaches these classes, and we have different people who you know, come into her class. And one time she has this woman who's got her arms crossed and a frown on her face. And it turns out, you know, when she asks her, what is it that brought you to class? And she says, oh, my friend talked me into it. I believe all guns are dangerous, and gun control needs to be pushed as hard as we can push it. And then she commented to Amber about all the guns on the table and says, do those have to be here? Is that necessary? It says, yes, it is necessary. I'm not going to have to touch one of mine. I said, no, not if you don't want to. You don't have to touch the gun. Then an hour later, when they got to the part of the class where you're going to handle the guns, that woman jumped up out of her seat and was one of the first ones who wanted to handle a firearm. And by the end of the class, she had changed her mind about firearms because, as she told Amber, well, I just didn't know.
Yep, there you go.
And so I was thinking about this during my drive over here to the studio. What's the best way to stop gun shootings? Start gun safety classes taught by NRA instructors in our public school system.
Well, yeah, like it used to be 50 or 60 years ago.
Absolutely. All right. 15, story 15, millennials and reality Skyfall. They're getting mugged by reality. That's great. I like that title. That was good. Mine was A Misguided Desire for Socialism. And then the other one was Can Bernie Catch Hillary? But in all of these stories, we're finding that the millennials, they think they want socialism, but you know what? They really don't understand what socialism is. And my favorite was a link from last week, actually. Millennials love socialism until they get a job.
Well, that
was, I think, Washington Post, was it?
Yeah, Washington Post. I mean, I love some of the quotes in this story, like the expanded social welfare state Bernie Sanders thinks the United States should adopt requires everyday people to pay considerably more in taxes, yet millennials become averse to social welfare spending if they have to foot the bill. As they reach the threshold of earning $40,000 to $60,000 a year, the majority of millennials come to oppose income redistribution, including raising taxes to increase financial assistance to the poor. I mean, the bottom line is the millennials are no different than any previous generation. In fact, you can trace it. Baby boomers supported big government and higher taxes in pretty much the same proportions as millennials have back when they were young punks. And then as they got more of a stake in the capitalist system, then their appreciation for big government started dropping as soon as they had to pay for it. It's human nature. If you benefit from big government, then you're going to support it. If you have to start paying for it, you're going to turn against it.
Well, here's the story. Here's millennials that are listening, and for the rest of you, here's the story. Hey, enjoy that A, but your teacher decided they were going to do a redistribution of wealth, so you're going to get a C in the class, so the person who's getting an F and didn't put in the effort can get a C as well. It's only fair.
I can just hear the, hey, right, as we speak.
All right. Number 14, a view to a suicide. That's because California is committing suicide, especially with its economy. Hey, automation. And so here's what happens when we raise the minimum wage. The seven employees that were demanding $15 an hour, six of them are let go, replaced by an automated kiosk. And the seventh one, who is getting $15 an hour, won't be any better off in the long run because the cost of living wage will catch up. Oh, those other six, they're in the unemployment line.
Well, not just that, but everybody else is going to cascade up the wage scale. Everybody
Absolutely.
Else. Absolutely.
What it does is destroys the middle class. It forces the middle class down lower into closer to poverty. What this does is it creates two classes, the haves and the have-nots. So the very thing that the Democrats accuse the Republicans of being is what they are creating with this massive jump of minimum wage.
And they're trying to do it in New York. They haven't quite gotten there yet. But California, the fact that that was it passed, it cleared the California legislature toward the end of this week. So they've got the $15 minimum wage statewide. And I was tempted. My headline was California's fight for automation and even worse unemployment. I could have used huge job surge about to hit Oregon, Nevada, and Arizona.
Or you could have been, California wants to be Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened. I talked about
how many
it,
businesses have left?
Oh, God, who knows? I haven't been to a Seahawk game in 3 years, so I haven't gone to the concessions area of CenturyLink Field or any of the surrounding businesses. But all I know is Seattle had its biggest rise in unemployment since 1991 in the fourth quarter of last year. At the same time, the surrounding suburbs had the biggest job surge, the hiring surge that they'd had in roughly that same time. Like 57,000 jobs were transferred out of the city of Seattle.
So, see, businesses do something silly. Let me give you a scenario here. My wife and I went to Garden Grove to go to the theater couple weeks ago because we were in the area. I was doing some work out there regarding Constitution Association, preparing for something. And so we're in Garden Grove and we decided we want to go to the theater so we could go watch a movie that turned out I didn't want to see after I saw it. The humor was so juvenile, it made it a waste of a movie. You may have heard of it, Deadpool. And
yeah, that's why I didn't go see it.
What a piece of crap. But anyway, So we go up to buy our tickets, and it's a dollar less than where we live. Hey, you know, it's a dollar less. That's cool. But it's assigned seating. That's fascinating. And the auditoriums don't look like they have very many seats. Fascinating. We go into the concession. Concessions is double. Double. I mean, we pay like $6 for a medium soda or $7, something like that at our theater. It was almost $15.99. It was $16 at this place for a soda. All right? I'm like, what the? This is a rough can anybody afford a soda here? But anyway, then I realized when we went in the theater why concession price is so high. They have recliners. And I mean nice recliners with a button to kick your feet out and plenty of room in front of you, so there's less seats in each theater. And my first thought was, what is this Edwards Theater owner thinking? Now, if I have a choice between sitting in a recliner and having double concessions or paying less money and sitting in a crappy seat, I'm going to pay the less money and sit in a crappy seat.
Well, and even the seats in Cineplexes really aren't crap. They aren't crappy. I mean, they're not recliners, but you're not going to fall asleep.
They're not,
but they're not too bad. They're not too bad.
They're not horrible until that dude that's 400 pounds wants to sit next to you.
Well,
for those big old giant recliners. But anyway, okay.
I never go into premieres, so I don't really have that problem.
Yeah, Star Wars went to the cheap theater, and I never seen so many, so few parking spaces in the cheap theater parking lot in my life. All right. story number 13, Quantum of Hillary. Superdelegates.
Well, that was Sheldon Silver. I call him super duper delegates.
Why even have a primary?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That's how you know that the fix is in.
I understand why the delegates are set up the way they are in the Electoral College and all that. The delegate system is loosely based on the way the Electoral College is. And then what it is, we're not a pure democracy. So if you guys foul it up as voters, you know, that there's a way for the more politically savvy to correct the problem. That's really what it's about. We're not supposed to be purely democratic, except when it comes to voting for a member of the House of Representatives. But on the same token, it's situated in such a way that the people's voice means something. It doesn't mean absolutely nothing. And when there's a flagrant, hey, people, we really don't give a crap how you vote. We're going to do it the way we want message sent, then it also causes an opposite problem. And, you know, and the system's supposed to check people. People's supposed to check the system, right? But this is a flagrant way of saying, hey, we just really don't give a crap what you got to say. Go ahead and vote, but it doesn't matter what you got to say. Flagrant. And really it's about power, and it's about who is control of the political machine. So that's one of the reasons why the superdelegate system is, for lack of a better way of putting it, really, really stupid.
Well, I mean, it serves its purpose, which is that the party gets the nominee that they want. I mean, Hillary Clinton has a moderate lead, and not a huge lead in earned delegates, but the super duper delegates are like 10-1 going for her. The other thing,
establishment favorite.
See that the difference, really, the biggest two biggest differences between the Democrat nominating process and that of the Republicans. Is that the Democrats have the super duper delegates, and the Democrat nominating process is absolutely opaque. I mean, the Republicans tell you, okay, here are the rules. Each state has this many delegates. This is how they're apportioned. You cannot find how the Democrats do it.
Right.
It's not there.
Have you ever seen how they figure out how many delegates they have to the formula? See, with the Republicans, it is, well, it has to do with population. So it's population plus number of representatives plus number of senators plus something else, and that's your number of delegates for your state. If you look up the Democrat, it's, well, it's this number divided by that number times this number divided by that. I mean, it looks like algebra. Well, no, it looks like something worse than algebra.
Yeah, it looks like Sheldon Cooper's whiteboard is what it looks
like. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, it's bullshit is what it is. Nobody knows what kind of BS it is because, you know, it's not supposed to be transparent. I mean, if it was, they wouldn't need the super-duper delegates.
It's DS, actually. It's donkey. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that works, too.
Yeah, okay. So, when we think about it that way, just remember, folks, elephants leave bigger turds. story number 12.
Yeah, wait till we get to Karl Rove. That's the biggest one of all.
Yeah, oh boy. Okay, story number 12, for your gaze only. Mississippi is going the way of Georgia, and Georgia's bending. Before we get into that, remember last week we were talking about Georgia and North Carolina. And there are corporations that, and the NBA All-Star game that are running away from North Carolina because of their anti-gay legislation. This is how the homosexual agenda does it. It's not by culture. It's not by promotion. It's by force.
Well, sure. And now the Obama administration is making noises about cutting off federal funding to North Carolina unless and until they repeal their new...
And my response should be, okay, go for it. We just won't send you money in the first place. Cut it off.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why, because they see the fiscal economic truncheon, cudgel, whatever, nightstick, sledgehammer, they know, the feds know, and obviously corporate America knows that that works.
Extortion works.
Extortion works. And so that's why they use it. That's why the feds have got the states hooked on federal subsidies, federal funding for this, block grants, et cetera, et cetera. And so, with Georgia and Governor Nathan Deal, it didn't even take any level of government to do this. It was just Disney, threatening to no longer use Georgia as a movie making site, and the NFL saying, "Well, we won't put Super Bowl 54 or 55 in Atlanta," and that's all it took. And that's I called it when I first wrote about it. I said, "You know what?" Nathan Deal is going to veto this religious liberty bill for just this reason. And he did. And now the only question I have is that Pat McCrory, the governor of North Carolina, signed this Keep the Perverts Out of the Bathroom bill. And
Amazing? You know what's amazing about the left? Is what they're doing is they're legalizing and encouraging mental illness while calling things that are not mental illness, like Christianity, a mental illness.
Sounds like the old Soviet Union, actually.
Yeah, it does, sort of. All right, story number 11, international license to kill. So let me get this straight. We have North Korea can launch nuclear missiles. Russia is expanding its nuclear arsenal. Red China is deploying, nuclear arsenal. And Iran is working on nuclear arsenals. So what we're finding out is the harder that Obama works to remove nuclear weapons from the world, everybody's getting them except for us.
Well, I mean, the Chi-Coms have deployed the DF-41 ICBM. It's the longest-range ICBM on the planet.
Holy cow.
And the Russians announced this. Because, see, Obama held an anti-nuke conference in Washington this week. Isn't it interesting that at the same time, the very same week that he's hosting this anti-nuke conference, the Chinese announced they've just deployed their longest-range ICBM, the longest-range missile on the planet, and the Russians announced, well, yeah, we're building a whole new stockpile of multiple independently targeted reentry vehicles, nuclear weapons.
So what you're saying is every time Obama opens his mouth, the opposite happens. So when he says we're going to reduce nuclear weapons in the world, it increases. When he wants more gun control, gun sales increase. And when he says that we are going to be free from terrorist attacks, they increase. So basically, when he opens his mouth, the opposite happens.
Either that or when he goes dancing.
Story number 10, the man with the golden agreement. Obama signed the Paris climate deal because nothing says freedom like telling you how you have to use your energy.
Well, it's going to be signed April 22nd, 3 weeks from yesterday.
But it's not a treaty, right?
It's an agreement. It's not a treaty, but he's going to enforce it anyway.
So in other words, they'll enforce it and stick it up our butt regardless of what Senate says.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, the only fly in that ointment remember the Supreme Court a couple of months ago put a stay on the clean power plan?
Well, I don't understand why we know clean energy works so well. Just look at Solyndra. Oh, no, never mind.
Yeah, the Supreme Court put a stay on that, a hold on that. But that was, I'm pretty sure, before the death of Antonin Scalia.
Right.
How long do you think that stay is going to last?
Of course, Scalia makes the next vote incredible, but what people have to understand is that means it doesn't mean that the Supreme Court's not going to hear cases with only eight. What it means is we're going to get these dead ties, and if it's a tie, it goes down to the last ruling,
right.
And usually those rulings are leftist. So, them having only eight is just as well as having a ninth person be a liberal on there.
Yeah, well, on average,
yeah, for the most part. Okay.
Yeah.
All I want to know, when are they going to start finding the windmills for killing bald eagles, American bald eagles? That's what I want to know.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's NIMBYism. That's what it's always been. It's what it always will be.
All right, story number 9, on His Majesty's final year. Now, most of this is about Obamacare, but I didn't get a chance to read your article about Obama cut Social Security. I'm assuming this has to do with Obamacare as well, because...
No, actually, it doesn't.
Not. No, okay. I figured, you know, in order to pay for Obamacare, they're drawing money from Medicare and everything. Might as well draw from Social Security, too.
Well, in the omnibus bill last fall that everybody hated, it included some Social Security cuts. Specifically, it's something called the file and suspend rule.
Well, Social Security,
which,
is that our biggest federal expenditure?
No, Medicare is bigger, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Basically, if for a married couple, one spouse could hold off on starting to collect benefits until they were 70 and grow their benefits 8% a year before they started drawing down them. So it it was considered a loophole. They cut it off, and Barack Obama signed it into law as part of the omnibus bill last year. So that was, in essence, a Social Security cut, and you haven't heard anything about it, and I guarantee you the reason why is because it's Barack Obama, and he's a Democrat. If a Republican had signed any bill that contained any cut in Social Security, you would have been hearing nothing but that for the past 4 or 5 months.
The rates of Obamacare going sky high. Fewer employers were able to handle health insurance costs Obamacare.
And let's just remember, folks, remember the employer mandate.
Oh, yeah.
Barack Obama deferred by the imperial decree a year and a half, 2 years ago. And everyone's kind of forgotten about that. I mean, Obamacare is totally laid waste to the individual health insurance market. But the individual market is like 5, maybe 10% at most of overall health insurance. The vast majority of it is employer-provided group plans. Well, the employer mandate kicks in the end of this year after the election. So when that kicks in, that's when the you-know-what is really going to hit the fan.
Now, real quick, Obama's open borders, treason, and microcosm?
Which one? I've lost my place here. Oh yeah.
See what kind of radio star are you? Can't even keep your place, jeez.
I'm old too, and I have bad eyes.
Alex, you want to say something about his comment about being old?
It happens to everybody. Get used to it.
I pretty much already have. No,
the Border Patrol Union late leader reportedly charges a 10-mile stretch of the Arizona border with Mexico was left unmanned for 2 days, allowing two vehicles to drive into the United States and escape. Of course, we don't have to worry about terrorists being aboard that because they just don't cross the border, right?
Well, the president of the National Border Patrol Council, testifying for the House Oversight and Government Affairs Committee, said the scariest part of those vehicles entering the United States is we don't know what was in those vehicles or whom, and we have no idea. And, of course, the Obama administration keeps saying, oh, the border's never been more secure. It's no problem. You know, like the Kip Diller routine. Oh, all is well. All is well.
Yeah. Remember what we were saying earlier about everybody getting their hands on nuclear? There you go.
Story to me,
there may have been some, or I would suspect that there might have been some coordination on those two trucks, because how did they know it was going to be clear to drive those trucks through?
Yeah, so we got moles. Story number 8, live and let have welfare. The great Cuba Obamnesty tie-in, because, you know, nothing says love for communism than sending capitalistic money to a communist country to help them out.
Well, it seems to me that they should distinguish between the Cubans who are willing to put everything on the line to cross the Florida Straits to get to the United States versus going to Ecuador, which Cubans don't need a passport to get to, and then walking up like with the rest of the illegals. I think that's the difference between those seeking political asylum and those just coming here to sponge off the system.
Story number 7, never say never again about attacks in Washington, D.C. Gunshots reported at the U.S. Capitol, more specifically the U.S. Capitol Visitors Center. And no, it wasn't a Muslim, but it did show how easily a gunman can get relatively close. But you know what? We've already been told, though, that you know walls don't work and guns don't defend. So I don't know what they're going to do.
And the remaining stories for the rest of the program on KMET1490AM.com, Constitution Radio, next. See you there.
Is America's Owner's Manual. Douglas V. Gibbs is America's Constitution Authority, broadcasting live on KMET AM 1490 Saturdays at 1 p.m.